Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. It's a Monday evening, slightly later than usual, but Edwin is with me. Hi, Edwin.
G'day, Martin. The rooster is a happy chappy.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, it's good to see. And finally, I mean, presumably this is all about a ploy to try and make sure that he doesn't go away again.
Well, that he doesn't fly the coop is what you're trying to say, Martin. No, that's right. It's he's got five chicky babes now, and keep him happy. And the bloody thing, still wants to crow at 4:23 in the morning on the dot. I figured he was born in day, in summer, in daylight saving time. So he thinks it's still. So his mental clock is geared at 5:23. Doesn't realise that you have to turn that clock back an hour. So he crows at 4:23, but the last few days, the chickens have just told him, "Listen, shut your trap, and keep on sleeping because we don't get up till the sun rises."
Well, that might at least stop him from sort of going away, I suppose.
Yeah, look, he doesn't fly. Yeah, like I said, he won't be flying the coop, and but yeah, we're going to have. I think I'm really thinking about having rooster cam now. We'll have the children's version, up to 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and post 8 o'clock, it'll be adults only version. with all these chicky babes in the chicken house. But look, the interesting thing, Martin, I guess, is from what we're going to be talking about tonight. And although we're having a bit of fun here, but I went to Lithgow, right, to pick up the chickens. And you can't get chickens anywhere else at the moment, and this place had five left, so I raced up to Lithgow to get them. And it was after lunch. On the way back after lunch, we decided to stop over and get a bite to eat at Lithgow in a local cafe. And I posted this up on Twitter too, by the way. And so we ate. Food was okay. It was ordinary, but it was okay. It was palatable. Well, yeah, can't expect much more these days anyway. And then go to pay, and we got charged a $5 weekend levy. I mean, have you heard of this madness before, Martin?
Oh, yeah, I have, unfortunately. And the question is, was it actually anywhere on the menu?
No, it wasn't. I could be wrong. I may be mistaken, but I didn't see any anywhere. There was no sign. The actual cashier told... at the counter, look, we were glad that this cafe was open at the time that we were there, and we were glad, and we were going to tip them. I would have tipped them anywhere, bring up even more than the $5 surcharge, to be frank, just to, as a thank you, as an encouragement. Keep on going. But like, it was really a slap in the face. But then I began to think as to the whole aspect of what's happening with the businesses out there, and what businesses are doing, and the hard times that they're going through, and the extra levy. So it's really a case of caveat emptor. If you go out and have a coffee these days, or like you go it's caveat emptor when you go out and buy a house. But there's a lot of people going through tough times, and They'll try whatever means to stay afloat, but it wasn't palatable, to say the least.
No. Well, it makes me think that maybe auctioneers will start charging a weekend additional fee for what they do too. How about that?
for all the spectators, all the people, not the participants, but because they get charged enough as it is, they'll charge $5 a. $5 for anybody that turns up and wants to watch them. I'd pay just to watch a lot of them make fools of themselves. But when they're trying to have auctions, the agent knows that they haven't had any real interest. And on top of that, as you say, Martin, you got the posse that comes with them, that should really be a part of the the Dummy Bidders Inc.
yeah, that's right. But I think you decided that there was even a better ploy rather than dummy bitters ink, right?
Exactly. I think there's more money in cleaning. There's more money in cleaning, Martin. I couldn't believe it. Cleaners are charging up to $150 an hour. Look, from my experience as a property and property management and managing properties over many years, we would have issues with the cleaning of premises as they got, that tenants clean before they hand over the keys and so forth. If they weren't satisfactory, and we had to get money from the bond or ask for, basically, or they didn't want to pay, we ended up in the tribunal. The tribunal has set figures. And the last time I was in the tribunal only gave up to about $280 for a two-bedroom apartment and $360 for a three-bedroom house. But these days, these cleaners, and this, admittedly, that was, it was about 3.5, 4 years ago when I was last in the tribunal, disputing the cleanliness of a property. This time around, we had quotes from $1,500 right up to $2,500 plus. So it was incredible. So I figured, stop it. Start up a cleaning business. There's more money in cleaning than there is in being a lawyer, I think.
Well, I think you're probably right, actually, at the moment. We Chat Chats have been busy, and I've done a couple of shows, actually, on China over the last few days because, of course, we've got this mortgage strike, which is actually going on quite significantly now. And we've also got some deposits that have suddenly been magically converted into investment assets, which means that people can't get the cash out.
No, and they've also got army artillery at the front doors of the banks, and to stop people from getting the money out. Look, there's a lot that's not been reported, unfortunately, and it's as one of our WeChat chatters said, it's like Tiananmen Square 40 times over, because it's happening in many of the second tier cities and many of the townships all over China, and only God knows how many people have been beaten up and gone beyond that even. But the interesting thing that the mainstream and the Western world is not really paying a lot closer attention to is the simple fact that they don't, We see the hype of the, in some towns that have been reporting, you see these videos of people, protesting outside the banks and wanting to get the money out. But look, the government have had this control for a long time, and we've shared it over and over again, on our rants, and that is the WeChat app that the people have. As I've shared in the past, with this app, there's an icon that tells you, whether or not you're safe to move around, which is a green code. Then you've got your orange or amber, which means that you've basically got 20 minutes to half an hour to get home because your residence, your building, the neighborhood's going to be shut down. And obviously then there's red, which means you can't leave your premises. You're a close contact, or you may be being reported as having the virus, and they're basically going to come and pick you up. So this is how they control people anyway. So if they don't really want people to go out and into the banks, they basically put out an Amber Alert and get people to stay local. And if they really don't want them to venture anywhere near the banks, they basically put a red alert, and you can't leave your house. You literally can't leave your house, and if you do, you get beaten up, and you get taken away, and you get put away in those camps that they have, and all sorts of things will happen. So they're the control. So I guess what we're seeing in a lot of the Twitter posts and some of the commentary that I've seen from the mainstream that some have picked up, where people have just been totally reliant, defiant, and they've just made a run for the banks. But there's hard times ahead, and as you and I've said, times are going to get harder before they're going to get better, and nothing's really going to have clarity there in China until post November or post the end of the year.
Yeah, well, and going back to those mortgage strikes, it's interesting that the data that was being used to try and actually assess how many people have actually gone on strike with their mortgages, it's harder to get now because basically that's being censored as well. So they don't want the message to get out because it's actually quite a large number of people now and a number of different cities that are actually basically saying, well, you know, you're not building this property I'm paying for already, because of course they start paying their mortgages before construction starts, right, unlike here. It's also interesting, of course, that quite a few people have intergenerational money that they have to put up to be able to actually start the process. I mean, it's a real big financial pressure for those people, and they're trying to make a bit of a throw about it. But then we also know that there are some people who are too frightened by the system and by those people watching and the various apps and things, so they still are compliant to what they want people to do. But it really is getting very, very pointy now, I think. And as you say, later in the year, be interesting to see how it shakes out.
Definitely, Martin. And that's one of the things that, which again, we've discussed in the past and we've made our viewers aware, is how the mortgages actually work over there in China, and that's the crux of the whole thing. You know, why should we keep on paying the mortgage if the properties want that? There's no confidence that the properties are going to be built and that the builders are going to be standing, in the near future as well, because of the huge amounts of debt that they're carrying, and the simple fact that the banks aren't lending the construction industry the money in order to complete these projects either. So there's a lot there. And then you've got the situation, as we said, we are the last generation, which puts greater economic pressure. People aren't looking forward to, they don't want to buy anything substantial. They don't want to buy anything of substance. So really they're just living for the day. And then you add to the mix the Tung Ping, I guess the Tung Ping is like our version of, she'll be right, mate, or just pick up your surfboard and go to the beach.
Absolutely right. And interestingly, of course, last week we spoke about fractional, right? Well, there's a bit more redefining going on, isn't there?
Yeah, frictional unemployment. So, and we came up, we coined the term frictional property prices. But look, America have taken on this new redefining the reality is, I guess one would put it, we could put it that way, is that they're trying to redefine reality, trying to redefine what is a recession. And pretty soon we're going to be talking about frictional recessions and frictional depressions.
Absolutely. Well, this is interesting because, of course, the official version is two negative quarters of GDP, right? And in the first quarter, US GDP was negative. The next GDP number, which is coming out very, very soon now, is likely to be negative two. So in official terms, they might actually be in a recession. But the question is, now they're trying to redefine it. So, and maybe it's not quite really a recession, it's just a little bit of a blip.
Yeah, it's frictional. Frictional, Martin, that's the word. It's frictional. The RBA, I can just see Lowy watching our show, and Lowy's going to start. Look, if he brings up frictional property prices, we know he definitely watches the show and he's a devout follower of the RBA.
Absolutely right. Well, yeah, watch for that word. We're going to find it definitely emerging. Hey, and also local, we chat. You found more evidence of, rentals sort of, I suppose.
Well, this is a website. I'll share more on this website later on in upcoming shows, because I want to actually go into these places and I want to photograph these properties that are on offer. I've done an English translation of the website, and it's rather interesting. I mean, we know that it happens. We've heard that it happens. I saw two apartments in the city that had been partitioned up, that we at one stage we were looking at assisting the owner to sell, but we said, look, you have to really get rid of all this extra partition that you've got here in order for us to assist, to help you sell it. So it's not new, but when you actually see it on the website And this is a website that is Sydney-based. The owners of this website is Sydney-based, and the Sydney-based, and it's really to get the message out. It's all in Chinese. I've got to do Google Translate for our viewers, so they can see what's on offer. And if you look at the rental method section that I highlighted, you can rent a single room. You can rent the living room. You can rent the whole place. You can share. You can sublease. So in other words, rent it and then sublease it yourself. Or you can even rent a single bed in a bedroom. There was one listing there that you could rent a bedroom with many happy endings throughout the week as well. It was it's an interesting website.
Wow. Okay. Well, if you look forward to more exposés from this website in weeks ahead, Edwin, it certainly sounds very interesting. And to reiterate, this was in Chinese that you translated, right?
Yeah, Google Translate helped me out here. But look, unless you know China, and I know two things. You got to know that this website exists, and obviously throughout the Chinese community they know about it. And this is how the little brothers and the little sisters find accommodation when they come over, or even students, and they find accommodation through this website. So it's obviously through word of mouth that and this is how we came across it ourselves, and we've been doing a little bit of research on it. And as I said, we're trying to get some appointments into some of these premises, because I actually want to see I've been told there's about three or four homes in Lidcombe that each bedroom has been they've introduced a portable bathroom, toilet, and a kitchenette into each bedroom of the house, like the one that we saw in Adelaide, except a lot more, in a lot more confined space. The other interesting thing here, Martin, is through this website, you can actually also rent a garage that somebody's converted into an office. So they're really getting entrepreneurial out there. So not only can you run, so this is where you could run one of those residential garage shop scenario. So you may own the house and you rent the garage out to somebody that wants to set up a business in your garage, have one of these convenience stores in your garage, or run it as an office. So this is obviously, look, it's getting harder out there to rent, or very expensive to rent commercial premises. And the question is, well, would you commit to a commercial premise not knowing whether your business is going to take off? So you can just about find it all on this website, Mark.
Well, of course, the next thing will be time slicing, won't it? So you can actually get that bed in that bedroom for a 12-hour slot between 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. or whatever it is, and then the other half of the day, it's the other.
Well, you could do it with cars, Martin. You could do it with cars. This is something on this website. Obviously, I didn't bring it up, but you could actually, timeshare a car. Mm. And I'm not talking about a Ferrari, and I'm not talking about a Lamborghini or a Merc or the like. I'm talking about a Toyota Corona, Corolla, Hyundai, and in some cases, you can timeshare a car, and that's been prepared or maintained so that you can work as an Uber driver. Now, there's an individual that I've been told that has 140 cars that he timeshares or time rents out to many people, I guess, 280 drivers.
Yeah, well, there you go. This is the absolute gig economy, isn't it? It really does highlight where we're heading. And, just where it's going to end is another question. And talking about go on.
So can we rent? I'm thinking of timesharing Dusty or Evan, if anyone's interested.
Well, you've got one of them beside you. Which is that one at the moment?
No, this is Evan. Evan has been rather clingy to me of late. I don't know why.
I reckon it's the chickens.
Probably.
Now, let's talk about another thing that's going through the roof, as it were. Listings. Listings are, they're growing, aren't they? What's going on?
Look, they are. It looks like a lot of vendors and a lot of vendors are timesharing listings on the main market. The timesharing listing space on domain. It just keeps on going up. It's just defying the cold weather, defying the rainy days, defying the seasonal retraction, historical retraction in numbers over winter. It's just defying all numbers, and they just keep on climbing. Not only as from the screenshots there, you've got the last week's start of the week numbers to this week. There's, I think it's about 200 and something more properties on market this week than there was last week. Things don't really start climbing back up. Traditionally, they didn't start climbing back up till the end of August, mid September is when you start to get the rising numbers in preparation for spring. Not only that, but I'm also seeing a fractional rises in auction listings. So, but Melbourne has more property rises in terms of auction numbers than Sydney. So it's they're more keen on getting out of Melbourne, what one would imagine. Yeah, so there's a bit more confidence, but it I guess it also relates to what the mainstream media are playing out in Melbourne, that Melbourne's drops aren't as severe as Sydney yet. Maybe that has a bit of impact, but they're a lot higher in Melbourne as to what they were. They're a lot higher in Sydney compared to last week than Melbourne. So it's rather interesting to see how these numbers are playing out. But a lot of people have been talking about on Twitter, picking up on these screenshots that we share. And it's not so much. We understand that this time last year there was, in comparison to last year, where I said that there was a 35% more numbers on market than there were last year. But a lot of people have failed to understand that, yes, we were in lockdowns last year, but that was one of the reasons why our property prices went through the roof, because people panicked. People took the emotional route and they panicked. They saw listing numbers drop to below 5,000 and money was cheap, or a lot cheaper than what it is now. That was still under the impression and the belief that the RBA wasn't going to increase the rates till mid to end 2024. So there was a lot more confidence. And when they saw the listing numbers drop so low, they panicked and they were paying well over the odds for properties that needed a lot of work, properties that were in many ways that were the advertising campaigns were misleading. And let's not forget that we were on lockdowns, but you could still go and do property inspections. That was one of the things that they didn't not allow you to do. You could still inspect properties to buy, and you can still inspect properties to rent. So, as much as I've been criticized on Twitter and other social platforms saying that, I've skewed the numbers, blah, 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 this and that. Look, it's about the simple fact that numbers on market are playing a big role and a big part as to the sentiment, added on to the rising rates, the other added pressures the vendors are facing, and buyers and buyers are less and less confident to jumping at the moment. So all these things are playing out. But I'm not skewing the numbers. We're just reporting on the numbers as they play out.
I'm just watching the old pussycat there. She's giving a go of the reveal. She's giving a bit of a reveal going on at the moment. Look at that. It's quite funny.
She wants to see what the tree of life is saying to her today.
Very good. Absolutely. So it is very interesting just watching these numbers and ticking up and ticking up and ticking up. And again, my data shows that more property investors are putting their properties on the market. There's definitely pressure from the banks in terms of people now being encouraged to sell while they can before prices fall, particularly when their mortgages are now going through the roof in terms of interest rates. And, of course, the transaction volumes in terms of sales is dropping as well. But you make a very interesting point, because last year, of course, property prices went up partly because there was less supply. And, of course, rates dropped dramatically and all the government schemes came through. First-time buyers, home builder, and the banks, of course, were very, very keen to lend because they had all this cheap money to lend. So all of those things created the perfect storm, And yet now we have many more listings than back then. And of course, as listings go up and as interest rates go up, no surprise, property prices go the other way.
No, exactly. And look, and that's what it is, and that's what we're seeing, and it's rather interesting. So if the trend continues, spring's going to be, we can expect another 3,000 homes coming on market. That's home, that's freestanding homes. So we could be well back into 2018, 2019 territory.
Absolutely. Well, I've still been doing my anti-spruik videos with Cookie Boy, who keeps throwing me more examples of prices reduced, so we make more shows about it. And there's an amazing correlation between high levels of stress and property price reduction, so we'll see how that plays out. But you're going to the big time, Edwin. You're going to be chatting with the US about what's going on.
The gringos are coming, Martin. The gringos are coming. It's our American cousins just want to know talk to us about. And of course, these are people that you know very well. Through yourself, they wanted to interview me about the auction, our methodology, I guess, is what they want to understand, how it works. I've been studying their auctions. I've been looking at 4 or 5 of their websites where you can participate and buy property under auction, their auction scenarios. So they want to have a better understanding of how we function. So with regards to auctions, I'm going to share a couple of interesting things with them. Maybe I'll share one of Tom Panos's videos as to the antics that he gets up to at auctions and what he says, and what also the real estate industry, what he says about the real estate industry. They also want to talk about what we think is going to happen moving forward. And I would say would have a lot to do with the pain that moving forward that people are going to be feeling, and obviously there's going to be all sorts of different levels of pain, and the ones that are going to be suffering the most, as you and I've spoken about many times, are the first home buyers that jumped in between 2020 and 2021 with all the scams and schemes that the government was putting out. So it's going to be interesting. Thank you for the for the opportunity shared with these people to interview me. So let's see. I'll share more next week as to what they what sort of questions they asked and what they wanted to know.
Well, I can tell you, Edwin, that they were quite intrigued, because when I started talking about some of the shenanigans that's going on down here, they didn't necessarily believe me. So I think they're trying to triangulate. So it'd be interesting to see their reaction as well. Very good. And as we move on, of course, now I've been practicing. What's wackier than a conspiracy theory? Is that right? I haven't quite got it right, but I'm practicing.
For that section there, Martin, turn the dial up on the volume a few more notches, and you'll be right. It's what is wackier than a conspiracy theory, Martin? But when the RBA when the RBA tells you that basically the RBA slaps down the property doomsayers, that's wackier than a conspiracy theory. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I must tell you that particular article refers to Michelle Bullock's presentation last week, where she actually started the argument along these lines. Many households have lots of buffers, right? But she's talking there about households without mortgages, as well as households with mortgages, right? Because only one third of households actually have mortgages. So 2/3 of people don't have mortgages. And in fact, half of those actually own their property outright. So, that was her sort of overarching statement. And then she said, of those with mortgages, there are some that are actually okay and there are some that aren't. Now, if you look carefully at her data, she's basically saying there's about 40% of households who have no buffers, no wriggle room, and very significantly in difficulty. And there's another 30 or 40% that are way ahead, and there are some in the middle. So it was very interesting how the Financial Review picked this story up and sort of tried to milk it the way that this particular article shows, which effectively said, nothing to see here, move on, right? But actually, when you look at what she actually said, I don't think that what she said and the data that she produced validates that particular headline.
Well, there you go. And again, the other thing there, Martin, is also that they talk percentages. It's interesting when you know that they talk percentages as opposed to numbers like you often put out, which is more significant. It's more poignant, and it's sort of more defining, and it allows people to see what's really going on a lot closer than just a percentage. And the other thing is when they talk about again percentages of people that are in strife, and you know, she's talking again the 40% of the 30% and so forth. Let's go back to what I keep on saying over and over again: we are not a very large market in terms of property. What does 40% reflective of? In terms of mortgages, it's what about 600,000? 600,000 properties.
So the way to think about it, there's about 3.5 million
That's correct.
Households with mortgages, right?
Yeah.
So if you think 40%, well, we're talking, you know, over a million. In fact, my calculations is at 45% in mortgage stress, which is 1.6 million households at the moment. So they are the people with mortgages, of which 1.6 million have issues, right? That's about 45%. So that's slightly higher than her 40%, but it's not a million miles off. But what that says is that there's more, you know, around a million households or more, basically not with much in the way of buffers. In other words, they're paycheck to paycheck. They're just about swimming, but only just. That was before the May rate rise started to hit. Now we've had May, June, and July, and of course we're going to have another one in August. So essentially, point one, it was historic. Point two is that 40% is constructed based on data from 3 years ago, which is what's called the HILDA data, which is a big survey that's done down by the Melbourne guys. And so the data set is very, very old. And the other data set the RBA uses is securitized data for mortgage pools. But securitized mortgage pools are handpicked. So they're not actually statistically representative of the total market. So when they keep saying, there's nothing to see here, everything's fine, you know, well, I'm afraid that one, her data even she uses really doesn't actually prove that. And two, the up-to-date data that I've got from my survey shows that we've got 45% of households with difficulty in terms of managing the cash flow. Now, they'll be able to be okay for a little bit, but now the rates are going up even higher. And for every 1%, 15% increase in monthly repayments on a typical 30-year mortgage. These are huge, huge numbers at a time when inflation is continuing to run hot. And of course, we will later this week, get the latest inflation numbers, which will be higher than the 5.1, probably quite a lot higher, 6 point something, I suspect, which means that we've got bigger inflation, we've got cost of mortgages going up, a lot of households with difficulty. And then if you go back to your numbers, there's probably some reason why it is that the numbers on listings are rising. It's because people are now having to make hard decisions about things.
Yeah, and then you add, let's say you only added 1,000 new home listings to each city, only 1,000 to each city. That in itself will send shivers down the spines of the real estate industry as well as the vendors that have got the properties on market. Sydney has what, something like 634 suburbs across all the LGAs.
Yep.
So that's only representative of what, 1.3 new listings per suburb, which is not a lot, Martin.
Yep.
Which is not a lot, and yet we, you know, people, vendors, and the real estate industry are panicking over the fact that we've only got, let's say, 8,800 in 40 or something like that currently, and add another 1,000 on that to the pain that vendors are feeling at the moment, and the pressure that the real estate industry is and things are going to start buckling. But we're talking about hundreds of thousands of families or mortgages that are in real stress. Even if you took 20% of the the ones that are going living paycheck to paycheck. So if you took 20% and you put those 20% on market, it is going to crumble.
Yep, absolutely. Now, that's exactly right. And, you know, a couple of interesting observations. There was a report from New Zealand saying that real estate agents are now going out of business because there's no commissions coming through. They can't get the sales aren't happening. So that means they've got no business income, which means that the industry is actually under pressure in New Zealand. I think wouldn't be surprised to see the same here.
But it's what we saw in what we were talking about in 2019 before the pandemic, and it was the actual pandemic that saved the real estate industry, Martin.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Very convenient. But the other point that what we're talking about here are the marginal borrowers, right? It's the marginal household. In other words, you don't need 50% or 40% or 30% to all hit the market. Just a few percent will be enough to really turn that market and drive prices significantly down. And that's what a lot of people don't understand, right? It's the marginal borrower, it's the marginal household. And actually, on some modelling that we've done, if you start getting default rates at 3 or 4%, then actually that is already enough to really put significant pressure on markets in particular locations. And interestingly, I did a show last week where I showed that the latest S&P data was actually reporting default rates of 3 and 4% in a number of Western Sydney postcodes already. So in some places, we're already starting to see those marginal things playing out. That's why this is so precarious. And this, of course, is before all of those interest rate rises come through, because if you get that May rise, the banks put their rate up later in May once the RBA announces, but it takes a few weeks for that to flow through onto the actual payments going out of households' accounts, so it won't really hit for a few weeks. So we've got a few more hits coming over the next few weeks as households see those mortgage rates go up and the payments go out. So I'm afraid this is looking pretty shaky.
Oh, look, it is. And again, and as you said, it's really something it's not going to take a lot of new listings on market to see more significant drops in or even greater acceptance at the occupiers. We will see a bit of a rise in properties being sold at auction, because people are going to be more and more attuned to accepting the prices on the day rather than holding on to achieve a greater price post the auction. Yep. So but the mainstream media will spruik that narrative in a way that's saying there's more confidence and blah blah blah, and they're having today. The numbers, as you and I say, numbers don't lie. Real estate agents and politicians, they're
No, exactly. Well, of course, the ABC actually asked me to go on The Business last Friday, and I was able to give, it was a 6-minute interview, I think, quite a long story. And I think I made quite a few significant points, and it basically was a much, much more sanguine view of what's going on. And it's interesting, quite a few people said afterwards that it was quite a lot of well-delivered truths for people who actually needed to hear it. So that's quite fun, really.
Yeah, well, that was the counter. I watched that. It was rather straight to the point. As I posted it on Twitter, I said, "This must be your love song dedication on a Sunday evening on 2GB, Martin. Tell me lies, tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies."
Well, she did actually ask me whether I trusted the RBA, right? And I gave a very short answer. And then explained why.
Exactly. It was rather interesting. So I guess that leads us to the second article, Martin, with regards to the weather and the turmoils and further pain and stress that the vendors are going to be feeling, or property investors and owners are feeling. But again, not really representing everything that you and I talk about on our Monday night rants, but at least it's some of these stories are slowly hitting the mainstream, and people are starting to realise that you've got to really take away a lot of the emotion when you go out there and buy a property, because emotion can get you into a greater troubles than what you think they will.
Yeah, and it's interesting because this article in the SMH specifically mentioned mold, and water ingress, and making the point, of course, with the big wet, it's really showing up a lot of things. And if you think about the amount of rain that we've had in the last month or two, you know, it's massive amounts. And a lot of the buildings are really showing their stresses and strains now. And I've sometimes said previously, I think, Edwin, I always say to people, when it's raining really hard, that's a good time to walk around a property, because then you can see what's really going on.
Yeah, look, that's right. And you see it in the basement car parks, you see it in the common areas, you see it in the, because this article focuses a lot on the high rise and on the apartment complexes, not the look. A lot of these reporters that don't know a lot about property, be it they call themselves property reporters, little do they know how much you can see in homes as well. In particularly the ones, both that are on the, that sit on slabs or on piers, you can see the indications of, you can get the feel of what the water that's falling, the rains that are falling, what effect they have on property, what future effect it will have on the land. We get the land is absolutely, Sydney is absolutely soaked, the rains, I believe, are going to continue throughout summer. But then all you need is 2 or 3 years of really dry weather, and then you'll get the shrinkages again, and there's going to be more strife because a lot of foundations haven't been put down right, and a lot of builders have taken shortcuts. So, but it's interesting how the reporter and the author of this article writes the extra rain. Extra rain could now cause damage. I mean, even if we got double the amount of rain, there shouldn't be any ingress in these buildings in the first place. The reason why there's a lot of ingress in these buildings is because of the shoddy construction methods and the shortcuts that many builders and developers have taken over the years, and the powers to be have allowed them to take these shortcuts, and this bullshit 2% levy on high-rise developments that was introduced in 2015 or thereabouts, 2015, 2016, as you're guaranteeing your insurance for future works and rectification works of your building. As I said to the at the time on a discussion, I can't remember who it was at the time on 2GB, it was the Minister for Fair Trading, I think it was there, as I mentioned to him at the time. That's nothing. 2% of the value of an apartment is nothing when you know that the people that have sold the apartment to investors, unbeknownst investors, and they haven't disclosed material fact, and they haven't disclosed a lot of the issues that the developers and the builders have had with other developments in the past to the prospective buyers and to their clients, and they're getting paid anywhere between, at the time it was 5 to 7% commissions. 2% means jack all. And here we are. We're going to have greater issues. And as I said, we've got issues now with all the ingress. We've got issues with the in the subfloor areas. We've got issues in the in the basement parkings, and the ground swelling. And then we'll have issues when the rains stop and we don't get much rain over a period of 2-3 years. We'll get other issues that will come about as the ground shrinks.
Absolutely, yes. Well, it's poor construction, and. What we should be understanding is that if things were built properly and designed properly, they would be able to cope with heavy rainstorms, right? Because heavy rainstorms do come, and they're part of the furniture in and around Australia. So in a way, blaming the big flood on something atypical is not actually the point. Right? We know,
and we shouldn't be building. We shouldn't be building in a lot of places in New South Wales in the first place.
Yeah, that's the point, isn't it? So if you actually take a more sensible view of it, and if you build in the right places, to the right standards, with the right materials, you're not going to have these problems, right? And the other point, it's interesting, of course, I saw this somewhere else, they're talking about lack of ventilation because it's been raining so hard so people couldn't open the windows and things, right? Well, that's a bit of a, that's not really the full story, is it?
No, that's right. Like I've talked about it before. You've got the mechanical ventilation that is just so inadequate. A lot of these things are compliant with the building codes and the standards. They're compliant, but the problem is that as things are getting built, shit gets dropped on the ducting, and then that gets blocked, and then the systems themselves, they're inadequate, so you don't get the cross-flow ventilation, and they're expecting tenants to open the doors, and you've got people cooking, people drying their clothes, washing the clothes, drying the clothes indoors in the indoor, in the laundries, and you've also got two bathrooms, ensuite and the main bathroom, and you got showers going, pool ball, and cooking and everything else. So, and this mechanical ventilations are just are failing, and they expect tenants to keep the windows open through winter. And how do you keep your windows open for ventilation to ventilate your property if it rains for 6-8 weeks? At a time? It's crazy. It's ludicrous. It just shouldn't happen. But here's an interesting fact, Martin. In parts of the Blue Mountains in Lawson, there's a section of Lawson that people have found out that their homes have been built over a natural spring.
Well, funnily enough, there's a few places around here that they've just discovered that the old springs that used to be, in the hillside and were diverted, right? Well, actually, no, they weren't. They were just hidden. And, of course, they've now sort of popped up again. And so people have got feature springs in places that you probably wouldn't want them.
No, exactly. So I've been talking to the local agents, and one in particular that's got four properties that he manages, and the water's coming up from all different parts of the yards of the land of the properties. And in one, the water's coming up from somewhere in the middle of underneath the house. And I said, you got to be kidding me! You got to give me the address, and I want to videotape this. So the more it rains, so this natural catchment areas, subterranean springs, they're now just full. And with so much rain that it's been seeping into them, they're just overflowing, and now they're just releasing the water. There's a bad side and there's a good side. The bad side is, of course, you've got water ingress issues, under houses and potential mold issues. But look, as I said to this real estate agent, the landlord or the owner of the property should look on the bright side. All he needs to do is just go get some plastic bottles, get a company that will supply them with plastic bottles, and then just go run a hose underneath the house, siphon the water out and sell it.
Absolutely. Fresh spring water from, well, we're not quite sure, not sure where. I will make one other point, Edwin. A lot of people, of course, didn't clear their gutters or check their gutters before the big rainstorms came through. That's something else that people need to do, because people quite often do it in the summer when they know there could be a risk of bushfires. But actually, it's very important in the winter to make sure that the gutters run free. Otherwise, you get water in places you don't want it also.
Yeah, it falls back towards the eve, and then depending on how that is, then it just creates a lot of moisture, and this is where you've got a lot of moisture in the frames of homes, and in between the frames, and if it's a double brick in between the brickwork or the lining, the internal lining, the gyprock and the bricks, and this is what termites love in the east coast of Australia. Termites just love our method of construction, our poultry method of construction, because we certainly build nice little havens for them, and that's, you end up with all sorts of issues, wood rot, all sorts of issues come.
Yeah, moral of the story is, if you're buying somewhere, make sure you get it checked out, and if you're an existing property, there is, unfortunately, folks, ongoing maintenance that's required. Now, Edwin, as we come towards the end of the show, you've got a very important tip for this week.
Yeah, I've been talking to builders. I've been talking to builders over the weekend, and also today to a couple of building inspectors and a builder. And some of the stories that they've been telling me. Look, bottom line is if you can avoid looking at buying to rebuild, avoid it altogether at the moment, because the you know, trades, as we've been talking about, in materials are just going through the roof, and they're only going to get more expensive. You've got a lot of builders and tradespeople in the conversations that I had today. The tradespeople and builders can't seem to hold on to the apprentices, and the apprentices are just too soft at the moment. When I say too soft, they just basically, if they get told in a loud manner to do something or to fix something, they just get upset, pick up the tools, or just leave the tools behind. They just walk off and they're nowhere to be seen. I don't know what, they're just being offered jobs, other jobs elsewhere, because they've got options. A lot of these young apprentices, they've got options to go wherever they want to, that they can choose to go because of the, of the demand in the industry. So if you're thinking of buying to build or buying to demolish and build something new, unless you've got really good, strong connections, don't bother. Not now is the time. Wait until, see how things are going to play out till the end of the year, especially with all the supply chain issues, future and greater supply chain issues with all the stuff that's happening in China, and not knowing what's going to happen here, and not getting the little brothers and the little sisters. Although I have been hearing some builders have been bringing in people from India in order to help them with in terms of laborers. They've been sponsoring people from India of late. That's rather interesting. But yeah, so unless you're well connected, avoid major renovations. Because even with the connections that we have, we find it very difficult, a lot harder to manage renovations and to manage projects, let alone wanting to build something new from scratch.
Great advice, Edwin. And I think it's also, given the financial instability of many builders and building firms at the moment, and the cost of materials going through the roof, I think you'd have to be very brave to set sail and with an intent to build something from scratch at the moment, and as you say, unless you know the firm extremely well and you've actually got inside tracks, very, very hard, and you'll probably pay over the odds as well. So, I think that's a very good advice. So good on that. Good on you for that one.
That's something that we heard on our traps today. So it's hot off the press, and this is from building inspectors to builders and to tradies. So it's rather, it's only getting, but then again, you and I have been saying, it's only going to get worse before it'll get better.
Yeah, it's playing out precisely the way that we said it was going to, wasn't it? If you go back and listen to our old shows, unfortunately, we've proved to have a pretty good crystal ball. So we'll keep polishing it, and we'll come back and do some more next week, eh?
Well, that's right. And look, I'm hoping to have some more, I'm hoping to get some of those photos. I'll really be pushing for our viewers for those photos for next week from the places that we're trying to get into to see this makeshift accommodation that's being advertised on these websites, and I'll also try and get to see if I can get a video of the that spring that sprung up underneath that house at Lawson.
Sounds very interesting. Well, good luck with that, and we'll certainly feature it as soon as it's available. Edwin, thanks very much. Have a good week, and we'll do it all again next week.
All the best, mate.
See ya. Take care. Bye-bye.